You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. Every weekday, it is Tuesday, September the 8th. It's episode 50, would you believe it? And I'm very grateful not only that you've all been listening for 50 episodes, but also that already on this show, we have had so many great contributions, not just from the UK and Ireland, but also many from America and France and Germany and Australia and South Africa and Canada. And today, you can add Argentina to the list as former rugby union international, the Leicester Tigers legend Marcos Ayerza joins me from his stud farm just outside Buenos Aires. That's coming up a little later, but first we focus in on what is a crucial week in Britain and Ireland. Paying spectators will return in Britain for the first time since March at Doncaster tomorrow, hopefully able to add atmosphere to the St. Ledger Festival. And I will be talking a little later to Richard Spencer, who saddles an intriguing outsider in Tyson Fury. But perhaps an even bigger few days ahead in Ireland with the 7th edition of Irish Champions Weekend. No crowds there, but a massive shop window for the sport nonetheless. And in a moment, I'll be speaking to the Horse Racing Ireland Chief Executive, Brian Kavanagh. But first, I'm joined by the RTE broadcaster and Nick Luck Daily podcast regular, Jane Mangan. Jane, for you, just how crucial is Irish Champions Weekend in 2020?
Well, every year Nick, Irish Champions Weekend is huge. Since its inauguration in 2014, it has essentially brought concentration of quality to our season and an end-of-season target or an autumn target that is, for Ireland, right up there and able to compete with the Breeders' Cup Carnival, with Royal Ascot, with that kind of a level. And I know everybody talks about the Arc. Well, the Irish Champions Stakes was the highest-rated race in Europe when Al Manzoor won it a couple of years ago. So the Irish Champions Weekend for Ireland as an industry is huge. 6 Group 1s across 2 days, brilliant prize money. And what we really want, any racing jurisdiction aspires to achieve, is the top international competition coming to you. And that's what we have. And I know 2020 is obviously a very different year, but to have the world's highest rated horse and Sutsas, a very much a forgotten horse, coming to the Irish Champions Stakes cannot be underestimated.
So you have Gaeaf. Not only do you have him, in all likelihood, you have top jockeys coming from the UK as well. How significant do you think it was that the Irish government rolled back and allowed elite sportsmen into the country and to not have to quarantine in the way that they had to before?
I think it was a very important factor in getting these horses to come, that their regular riders can partner them. And I've no doubt it, you know, from soccer players to rugby players, that elite sports people compete on an international level consistently. And I know 2020 has been pressing, but if you can at all, under any measures, get this to happen, it needed to happen. And just the timing of it was so important. And I know Brian Kavanagh had been working very hard on that. Even we heard Geraldine stress that Colin Keane partnering Siskin was really important to him, and Ken Condon with Billy Lee on Romanize. And I know while that didn't work out, it was still important that they stay loyal to those horses. And I think it probably has played a big factor, if Gaeath comes to Leopardstown on Saturday, that William was able to come.
Well, I've been speaking to the Horse Racing Ireland Chief Executive, Brian Kavanagh, who's been about a decade in the role now. It's been a challenging year for him, as it has been for everybody. I talked to him an awful lot about some of the issues that Irish racing has been facing and continues to face, but I began by asking him about the forthcoming Irish Champions Weekend and how important it was.
Oh, I think it will be huge, Nick. We're really looking forward to it. And of course, everyone knows it's been a difficult year. And you come around to these big meetings and it really hits home, you know, the new situation we're in, and none come any bigger than this weekend. So we're really looking forward to the racing. It's shaping up very well, and I think it's a real tonic for everybody to have such quality racing.
On a hot topic, certainly my side of the Irish Sea, How have you managed to distribute prize money to the extent that you have?
Yeah, we cut prize money at the start of the pandemic necessarily because of the situation we're in, and you know, certain sponsors weren't able to continue. So our prize money is still good for the weekend. It's 3.4 million over the 2 days. That's about one third lower than it was last year. So during the course of the year, we introduced progressive prize money cuts. We dropped our minimum value for any race from 10,000 to 9,000, and then progressively built it up. So the Champion Stakes this year is worth 750 compared to 1.25 million last year. You know, you don't like doing that, and we want to get those levels back as quickly as possible. But generally, I think those decisions have been accepted, if not well received.
And where do you stand at the moment in terms of the likelihood of any paying spectators coming to an Irish racecourse anytime soon?
We should know a bit more on next Monday. The government will publish its 9-month roadmap for the next 9 months of dealing with this pandemic, and attendance at sports events is one of those issues. At the moment, we've probably got the most restrictive conditions of any country in Europe, where basically all sports, not just racing, it's literally restricted to competitors and those that are required to run the event. So we saw Leinster playing Munster in a 53,000 stadium on Friday night last, you know, with probably 200 or 300 people in attendance. Now, as I said, next Monday, the government will publish a roadmap, and we're hopeful that will contain some positive news, and we would like to use the last quarter of this year, you know, to trial some of these new concepts that we're going to have to bring in terms of the way we go racing. You know, I guess like the UK, what's happened here is the race courses have effectively been commandeered by the officials and the workers. So you've now jockeys tugging out in the most unusual places. You have stewards, hearing stewards, inquiries in different places, all to create social distancing. That's fine when it's just a workplace. When you start letting customers back in, be it owners or paying customers, then the logistics become a bit trickier. But I'd be hopeful next Monday that we'll get some news, and then in the last quarter of this year, we can start trialing some of the ideas to get people back on track.
Does it frustrate you when you see crowds in France and the beginnings of controlled crowds this week in the UK?
No, I think the opposite. It gives us great hope. I think, throughout this whole pandemic, it's been difficult to compare one country with another because different governments are facing different situations and handling it differently. You know, but the fact that there are crowds back and have been in France, and that seems to have been done safely, and that you're about to start this week, you know, that gives us great ammunition to go and talk to our government, you know, about this being a safe activity. So no, not at all. It was great to see the crowds at Deauville, you know, during the summer, and look forward to seeing them at Doncaster this week.
And would you be confident that Ireland can retain a good proportion of the workforce into 2021, particularly given the fact that we haven't had paying spectators on the racecourses for such a long time, and that a lot of the sales have had to move outside of Ireland because of the restrictions and the quarantine regulations?
Yeah, I think it's a challenge, but I think it can be done. I mean, funny enough, our horses and training figures for the year to date, and our active owners figures for the year to date, are actually up on last year, you know, despite the shutdown and despite the restrictions. Now, a lot of those are driven by decisions that were probably taken prior to the pandemic, you know, so we're watching with great interest the yearling sales this year. You know, I think the sales is a temporary situation of having to move the sales to the UK because of the travel restrictions. You have to hope that by the time they come around next year, I think we've always said that the area that worries us the most is the racecourse sector and the businesses that depend on the racecourses. You know, we've kept the breeding industry going throughout. The same foals will be born next year as would have been if there was no COVID. You know, trainers have managed to keep training through the lockdown, and the owners have been loyal to them. It's the race courses, and the caterers, the toads, the on-course bookmakers. They're the areas we're focusing most on, and they're the ones that need the most support, I believe.
Brian, if you were to look back over the last 6 months and an incredibly challenging period for everyone, let alone someone who has to administer an entire sport in a country in lockdown, what would be the most significant thing that you've learnt from that period?
Very interesting. I think the most significant thing of all is nothing to do with racing. It's just to when you switch on the TV and you watch the news stories of people who've been affected directly by this pandemic, and it will break your heart to see some of the stories. And I think in everything we do, we have to be cognizant of the general you know, suffering that's going on and the general hardship that people are facing. You know, within racing, you know, a couple of good things. We got very strong support from the government to resume racing and to continue resuming racing, you know, in a safe fashion. And that was reassuring. The racing merited the being the first sport back. I think we've learned the benefits of everybody pulling together in a wonderful fashion. The staff, the trainers, the officials, you know, and the race courses have all really done well. And I suppose the most important thing of all you learn is that racing is really not a lot of fun without racegoers and spectators and atmosphere on the racetrack. It's an efficient, effective way of running races and getting horses through the system. But we need the atmosphere and the crack of a race meeting to really enjoy it. So a whole load of learnings, Nick, some positive, some negative. And you know, we'd probably do some things very differently out of this pandemic than we did before.
In what way?
Well, just looking at we've raced, you know, nonstop this summer, flat season. The flat season didn't effectively start until June the 8th, you know, and then we've had day after day of flat racing, and it's been quality all the way through, and that's been very interesting. So, you know, that's something worth looking at for future years as to whether a more condensed season is better. We've introduced 48-hour declarations. They seem to have been well received. And a variety of different things like that you just say, okay, God, we never would have thought of that. You know, we're running the Grand Prix de Paris in France on Sunday. It's usually run on the Bastille Day in July. You know, so maybe some of these changes that have been forced upon us, we should have a look and see whether there's merit in considering them on a longer term basis. Easy to say, I know, not so easy to do. But, you know, this has made you look at the fundamentals. You know, and the real appeal of racing, what is the appeal of owning horse? What is the appeal of going racing? You know, why do people do it and how can we encourage them back after the shock that we've had?
So I think taking what Brian said about a government announcement on Monday, Jane, that there might be some pilot days coming up, and talking about how he might have learned a few lessons from the last few months to go forward, you sort of get the sense that we're gradually working towards Ireland being sort of fully open for business again.
Well, absolutely. But we need to keep pushing forward, and Brian at the helm is going to make that happen. Obviously, we have on a political landscape, it's been a bit turbulent here in Ireland, and we needed to just keep reminding people that horse racing is no fun without crowds, and that it is in everybody's best benefit that we get people back on track sooner rather than later. And it's been something that, as soon as racing returned, the question was put to everybody, when can owners come back? And now we're looking at an autumn date for a trial, and it seems late, but I appreciate that up until now, the government just hasn't allowed it to happen. And it's all well and good saying it should have happened before now, but realistically, it is a government decision and our hands are tied. So hopefully sooner rather than later now would be beneficial for everyone.
Brian talked about possibility of 48-hour declarations staying in Ireland. Would you be in favour of that?
Very much so. I think the only argument that people, trainers and owners maybe in particular, would be that ground will change. But to be honest, ground changes a lot anyway. And if the ground changes, you can withdraw with no expense. From a fan perspective, I think we always ask how we can improve the sport for our fans and our onlookers. I think 48-hour declarations has been a huge help for media and for everybody, right down to the spectators and punters, that 48 hours has a lot more pros than it does cons for me.
What about a more condensed season, so you've got more distilled quality?
Yeah, it's something that may be open for discussion, and I'm all for open-mindedness, but up until this year I didn't think we had a problem. Here in Ireland, when you start a turf season in March, you end in November, and you have Dundalk over the winter on the all-weather, it's pretty a good structure for the flat season. I would say when racing returned in Ireland, jump racing didn't return immediately. And I think a lot of my comrades in the national hunt sphere appreciated a break whereby they weren't worried about somebody getting the ride from them if they were on holidays, or, you know, just having 2 weeks there where you can just take a break. There is no break in national hunt racing in Ireland. And maybe that's something that could be introduced.
Brian made a nod to this weekend's other big European race, the Grand Prix de Paris, which will see the return of the Derby winner, Serpentine. Jane, I have simply no idea what the Derby was all about this year. It was an oddity, and subsequent events have proved that it was an oddity. I also have no real idea how good Serpentine is, so I'm looking forward to finding out.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody does, Nick. If you are professing to know how good Serpentine is, I'd love to know your thesis on that, because the Derby this year is just, it's been so difficult to comprehend. And he could, realistically, Serpentine could be an absolute airplane, but he needs to go and do it. A couple of Epsom Derby winners in the last number of years just haven't backed it up for whatever reason. And we know the Epsom Derby is the race that everybody should want to win. It's been won by legends. But I'd like to see, for the Epsom Derby itself, a horse like Serpentine back it up in a race like the Grand Prix de Paris. Now, it's his first run in quite a while. First run since Epsom, big gap. But it does look like the ideal starting point, because I'm not convinced it'll be the hottest of renewals of the Grand Prix de Paris.
And just reading through the recent list of Derby winners, it doesn't make particularly brilliant reading since Golden Horn won the race in 2015. Harzand, Wings of Eagles, Massar, Anthony Van Dyke, Serpentine, asterisk, as yet untried. But it doesn't exactly set the pulse racing. The race needs a good one.
Yeah, it does. But to be fair, Harzand did come out, win the Irish Derby. Wings of Eagles and Massar both had injuries. So the race, maybe they are very good horses, but you want to see the stars. You want to see a Camelot, and I know you can't have them every year, but just the manner in which Serpentine won the Epsom Derby, you know it's possible that he could be a different level. We just need to see it.
It would certainly enrich the season significantly if he were to come out and back that performance up with something similarly glittering at the weekend. What else are you most looking forward to, Irish Champions weekend-wise, or indeed Doncaster, St. Ledger, which we barely touched upon?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Santiago. I think he's a horse that can only step forward. And I'm looking forward to seeing Sutsas and Gayath in the flesh. I haven't seen these horses in the flesh. And it's one of the main, like, really, your heart breaks for racing fans here in Ireland who would love to go to Leopardstown on Saturday to see these horses. And they're not going to see them in the flesh. That's really disappointing for everyone. And I think Sutsas is a completely forgotten horse. And it's interesting what Jean-Claude Rouget said in the Racing Post today. The horse is in top form. He goes to Leopardstown. It's a race he has to run in for his stallion career. That'll tell you how important Irish Champion Stakes is, when a man of Jean-Claude Rouget's stance is saying that. And when he came with Al Manzor, that was a race of race for the ages. So I'm hoping that those international horses come, meet the best of the Irish, and we have a fair race. I'm also looking forward to seeing Fancy Blue in the Matron to see if she can continue her step forward. And of course, Master of the Seas potentially meeting Battleground in the National Stakes. That could be the best two-year-old race of the year so far.
It certainly is the best two-year-old race of the year so far on what we know to this point. You mentioned Santiago in dispatches. He's likely to be a warm order for the Pertemps St. Ledger at Doncaster in front of a crowd of about 5,000 people on Saturday. And he is likely to be ridden by Frankie Dettori. No better combination, you'd think, for a crowd. One less heralded horse in the race has had just the one start. That's Tyson Fury, trained in Newmarket by Richard Spencer for Rebel Racing. I've been talking to Richard this morning. I asked him whether it was still the plan to run his once raced, once victorious horse in the oldest classic.
Yes, Nick, we entered him yesterday, and the plan is to go there, all being well, on Saturday.
And what's been the thinking behind it from the word go?
Well, we were trying to and planning to run him early on in the season to get an entry in the Derby, and we wanted to get him out and run him in the Derby. But with the year that we've had regarding the COVID, we haven't had chance to run him early and had to take a bit of time with him and. Basically, yeah, it was just sort of everything was against us from the start of the year. For, you know, he was ready to go, and then we didn't have enough time and actual races really to get him out prior to then. And we just then decided to take our time with him and have the Ledger in mind then.
I mean, to us it seems quite an ambitious thing to do, but to what extent is it a measure of the regard that you hold the horse in, or have always held the horse in?
And we've always liked him, and last year as a two-year-old, old, he was, you know, he's a very physical, you know, the physical size of him. He's a big horse and always was going to need a bit of time. And I know a lot of people sort of wrote about him running over the trip he did first time, being by Ifrage and having relatives that are sort of speedier types than him. But he's not slow. He saw the trip out well on debut, and we went to Doncaster thinking he'd run a very big race and sort of fancied him really.
And he didn't just run a very big race. He absolutely bolted up. You've trained good horses. You've trained a lot of good horses. Do you think he's the best that you've had?
That's hard to say, really, because obviously with Raja Singh, he was a very good horse in his own right. Broke the track record at Royal Ascot, and you know, was a very good two-year-old. This is a different type of animal than we've sort of encountered in the past. We're not as lucky as some of the trainers like Mr. Gosden and Mr. Stout to have a good number of the type of horses in the yard, but I think if he's definitely up there. He's only ever ran once and won once, so he's got a lot to prove still. And whatever he does this year, he's not going to be the finished article really until next year. He's a very big horse, and you know, he's an exciting horse. Hopefully we can have around for a good while.
In your heart of hearts, when he runs in the St. Ledger, how do you think he'll run?
Look, I think he wasn't stopping. When he won it on debut, it actually, he didn't pull up until nearly the end of the back straight. He wasn't stopping. The race, they sort of stopped-started in his race at Doncaster. The pace was slow, then quickened up and slowed down and quickened up. And he came from last off what was a sort of a helter-skelter pace, really, and he quickened up, and the fractions were very good. The form at the time probably didn't look like, you know, that it was a great race. People were sort of knocking it, but Roger Varin's two horses that finished behind us have come out of one, and they're winning some decent, you know, they're winning off ratings, handicaps that I think the performance is probably been not held as high as if it was trained by someone else, if I'm being honest. And I generally think if he lines up on Saturday, he'll run very well. He was never flashy in his homework before his debut, but he's done some flashy bits of fast work recently, and I think he's still learning, which is obviously going to be the case with a horse only running once. But he's in good form, and I'm really looking forward to running him.
Well, it's Tuesday, so it's time for our weekly Bloodstock segment, which is brought to you by Weatherby's Bloodstock Services. Now, Weatherby's general studbook statistics tell us that Argentina is one of the top thoroughbred producing countries in the world, breeding around 7,000 foals born each year. And today, we're hearing from an Argentinian thoroughbred owner and breeder who is better known to many as a real rugby union legend, not only for his home country, but also for many years for Leicester Tigers. He is Marcos Ayerza. Marcos, just tell me how the thoroughbred is in your blood.
Yes, my family started horse breeding around 40 years ago. My grandfather bought the first stallion back in the farm. We own a farm in Argentina, which is next to the coast side of the Buenos Aires province, in a place near Pinamar, which is a beach resort. People go on holiday there. And this family farm, my grandfather bought the first stallion, some brood mares, but unfortunately he couldn't see any of the horses race bred by ourselves. So my dad, with some of his brothers, they kept on with that. They bought brood mares. And then in 1986, we had our first big filly, which was, we won a Group 1 in Argentina, one of the three big races in Argentina, and it was sold to the US. And of course, in 1986, that was more the start of the, wow, this is fascinating when you get access and the horses and the family all together going to the racetrack, supporting a home bred horse. And I just started from there. I myself, I was brought into that world from little in the farm, going with my dad to the beach to watch the the preparation of the horses, and then I did my career in rugby, of course. I lived in England for 12 years almost, but I started buying my first horses when I had my first money, and then of course I'm now having some horses with my dad and some of myself, you know.
And when you lived in England, when you were playing rugby, you were so busy. You know, 246 times you played for Leicester Tigers and 66 international caps as well. Could you keep up with the racing then, or were you just too preoccupied?
Yeah, so playing rugby is fascinating, and it's. But of course, I think in my 11 seasons with Tigers, I had average around 30 games a year, you know, on average. That means almost every rugby weekend been playing. It was hard to follow, especially we in Argentina. We had flat season, flat racing as the main season all year round, and that's the race that I prefer, to put it somehow. And always the flat season started at the end of the year, so of the rugby year in March, April, and that was when they were playing the final games. And then the summer came and I had to travel to Argentina with the national team to play the June test and then the rugby championship at the end with South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. And it was hard to follow, hard to keep it up. But I always had a friend, Nick Craven from Weatherbys. He always invited me to come to the races, and also have another friend called Charles Allen, who invited me to the Rolly Mile or to Toster or to I don't know, different places, to go and see Frankel race, to go and see the Thousand Guineas, and to Ascot, and I would try to keep myself involved and visit starts, and because I love horses and I like to learn, of course, in England, and it's up to date. Of course, I talk to Nick regularly and keep up to date, and yeah, it's something that has been in my life for many years, and I enjoy it quite much.
Marcos, thank you very much for talking to me, and don't forget that you can catch all details of all Global Stallions on the Weatherbys Global Stallions app. My thanks to Marcos and to Richard Spencer. Jane Mangan is still with me, and Jane is going to give us a tip for today.
Yes, so we are talking about classics, but I'm going to a maiden hurdle in Punchestown, quite a similar event, really. I am going to tip up Duke Up for Ted Walsh and Mark Walsh in the 2:30 at Punchestown. This guy was fourth in the entry bumper last year. He's a course and distance bumper winner last year. And when he was beaten last time on the flat, he was beaten by Barrington Court, who is now contesting the Oyster Stakes at Galway this evening. So Duke Up, for his first start over hurdles, I think he could do the business for Ted Walsh.
Jane, thank you very much. That's all for today. Thank you very much for listening. That was Tuesday, September the 8th. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.